Thank you. So we're here today. Here's some of the objectives. We're going to show how to use the Content Enrichment Web Service to light up the new search experience, see how we can use enrichment to create really compelling search experiences. We'll go in detail through the new content processing architecture in SharePoint 2013. And last, we'll show some techniques for achieving scale and full tolerance when you build out the web service, the content web service extensions. Before we go into it, I'm going to show you the search architecture at scale again, at the high level overview. You've probably seen this before now a few times with other sessions. So I'm just going to quickly just repeat for those of you who haven't seen it yet, or just for a little reminder. On the left-hand side, we have content, so we can process content through the crawler, both SharePoint content and any content that lives outside of SharePoint through connectors. We're going to show that in a demo today and utilizing some of the connectors there. The crawler will then pull it in and feed it to the content processing component, which is the one we're going to talk in depth about today. It can call out all different content from both SharePoint and from BCS, external content, LOB system content, feed that can go to the content enrichment web service. And that box on the top there is something going to show you how you can set up, and we're going to use that for our demos today. In the fast search in the core, that's where all the documents are fed from the content processing. After basically taking PDFs and Word documents, all converting it to text and handing it off to the search index. It creates the inverted index that's now available through the from the web front end for the query processing to query. So on the right-hand side, you have the UX, which could be the SharePoint UX out of the box, or custom-created apps. I'm going to show some of that today, too, how we can use apps to query all the content as well. The analytics processing component is there to analyze all usage behavior and also links that the content processing component will feed to the component. And on the bottom here, we have the search admin, so you can control and access all of this, all of these components through PowerShell. Also, each of these boxes you see here are individual scalable, so you can scale out depending on the amount of content you have, or traffic, or also number of documents, or high query volume. So all of these boxes are accessible through PowerShell to just add on. Other sessions has gone into that in detail. So just to clarify, we're going through the content processing component and we'll show what it does, what's new there, and go and take a look what's behind that box and zoom in a little bit and look at the flows and all the pipeline and what's going on there. So what is new in 2013? I think you've seen now that we combine the best of the best from both the SharePoint search and from Fast Search into one unified search engine in 2013. So in the content processing, what that means too is also done a lot of new innovations on top of what was there in SharePoint and in Fast. We brought forward components that have been utilized in the standalone Fast Search for Internet site as well. And we'll take a look, Katharina will go through those in detail later. What a few of the things that are new in there are deep link extraction, which I'm going to show you in a second. Well, it extracts content and paragraphs from Word and PowerPoint, so it's easier for users to see whether that document they're looking at is the right one for them, and they can zoom into it closer. The smart metadata extraction is that we're looking not just for the metadata that are implicit, but we're looking, for instance, for author. If we detect author property in Word document, we'll actually go in the content itself and see if that author is mentioned on the first page, for instance. Does it actually match with what the metadata for a document says? So we'll use who the real author is, because a lot of times there's templates in an organization that are handed out for people to start from. We don't want to use a template author for indexing into search. People search and new in content processing. We added a lot more languages there for phonetic matching, and it happens within the pipeline. Katharina will show you where exactly in there it happens, as it's important to, if you want to build content enrichment here, to know exactly which flow, what stages happen where. Like I said, we had document parsing for PDF and all the Office, the new formats in 2013 as well. The extensibility is similar to what in Fastr for SharePoint. It's new from SharePoint Server 2010. So the Content Enrichment Web Service, something new we added. It's similar to the Fast one. It's different in the way that the protocol are handled. So it's different how we communicate and send documents to it. So if you do come from Fast, you can still do the things you do and the capabilities, but there will be some changes to how you communicate with the service. We've done a lot of improvements to make speed much more efficient in this release. We have entity extractors. I'm going to demo it too, so we can upload our own dictionaries and parse the text and parse and look for entities in all documents that are fed through the system. We have word break-ins and iFilters too. If you want to look at the linguistics and handle a different for different languages, it is possible to extend with those. And I think if you've seen all the what's new sessions and sessions throughout the week, is that search powered a lot of different scenarios. So we're really going out of our way to make it work both for business productivity through intranet, as well as running, for instance, e-commerce on search, so growing your business online. So not just using search for finding documents, but also for marketing, help businesses grow and sell more products, for instance, in the e-commerce environment. And it's easier to manage than ever before. I alluded to that in the architecture where everything is accessible to PowerPoint. You can scale up and down as the system is running, which means you can do things like actually migrating a live system other to new hardware. I think they'll go through that in the scaling and sizing presentation as well. So with that, I'm going to start look at a few demos. Let's see, switch three. Can you see the screen? Yeah. Just double checking is there. Just going to take a look at the smart previews. I'm here, I have a search system, and here's a search for search. And so what I was talking about earlier, the deep links. So we could take a look at a PowerPoint here. You can now see that you can take a look inside the document itself, and we extract the text in the content processing component. We extract the text and the paragraphs within it. So if I click on it, it will take me directly to that page within the document. And I also can, of course, just browse through the document and see whether this document is something that matches what I'm looking for. I can easily take, and also for the documents, I can also do this for Word documents and PowerPoints right now. So that's just a quick overview of the smart the preview and what's happening in the content processing. Where that exactly happens, we'll look at a little bit later. I'm going to move on to the content enrichment part. So what we've done is indexed 1,000 or so recipes for a fictional company called Contoso Food. So this is a company that has users, end users, creating recipes and uploading them to which we access through a web service. So it's user-created content, unstructured text, basically. We index that through BCS and pull the data in from the web service into SharePoint Search. But the text from the users are, like we see, if we do a search for instance, for food, or let's do grill. What we're getting from out of the box, I'm showing you just what happens if I create an empty search center and index content through BCS. I get all the titles, et cetera, and some not-so-friendly looking URLs. And you can see under refiners here, it's empty. It just knows about the date. So there's really nothing in the metadata that says anything about the recipes we're searching. So what we've done here, I'm just going to show you the before so I can go to the after and look how much better it looks. So let's take a look at the final one. So I go in here, I search for food, and I've done some easy customization here of display templates. As we've seen other sessions now that you can use just HTML5 templates to create the visualization of these documents. So now I've just printed the pretty URL, the description and text from the data. I'm not a UX expert, so I'm putting a lot of information into the hover card here as well, which is also a custom-made one. But you can see from some of this data that it's just directions and a description about the content. From that, from the users, we don't know a whole lot about data. If I search for food previously, I just get a lot of documents. It doesn't tell me what's in the what's in this data set here. So what we've done now is I created an entity extraction dictionaries and pulling out terms like Thanksgiving and Christmas to show that we do have recipes that fit for different holidays. So now our end user browsing this content can see that, okay, I do know that now there's something for Christmas, there's something for Thanksgiving here that I can use. Something the users themselves, the author of the content, didn't explicitly put in. Because, like most users and myself, we're lazy, we don't fill out all that metadata typically as well. So now we enrich the content by pulling out extra metadata, which makes it easier for the end user now to realize what we have here in the content. And also we created a calorie counter, so this is some custom code. So all the documents are flowed through the system. We parse through the text and pull out the calories and also how many people this recipe serves. So I'm basically getting a calorie counter here. So you can see that now I can see what type of healthy choices I can make for my recipes as well. Again, this is not something that the authors themselves added, that this is a healthy recipes, but this is something we concluded by doing some deeper analysis on the content itself. So you can see now here, you can see the curve is slightly shifted to the left. I searched for grill, and it slightly changes to the right. You can see here too now, it changed. So now you can see it's dynamic. The refiners are dynamic. It depends on what you search for. So now I'm getting, because of I choose a different keyword, you can see that the dynamic refiners, it shows a different set of less healthy choices, I guess. So I want to see what's actually in these different choices. I use the visual refiners and just say I want the real unhealthy choices, and you can see we're getting burgers, etc. So again, it's not something the users themselves put in, but now by extracting this data, we enriched the content, added a lot more metadata, and thus we can see and make it easier for end user to go through all of this content, make it easier for them to find what's there. So how did I create this thing? I'm not going to go through the display templates. There's actually a session tomorrow morning which will take this app and go through step by step and how to build this example. It's Matt King and Andrew Worley around 9 o'clock tomorrow. So they will go through actually how to crawl the content, how to create the display templates, and also a little bit of the web service extension. So I'm going to go to the server running this. I have here's the backend server. I created just a simple holidays CSV file. So this is the entity extraction dictionary. Fairly simple, just to highlight the effect of it. So I just said for any term of Easter or Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, add a refiner term for Thanksgiving. Excuse me, I'm gonna get a little bit of water. So these are terms that are now added to the document itself, and I showed it as a refiner. This dictionary, you can use a few simple lines of PowerShell to add that dictionary in. So in the this line just basically shows you I'm pointing to a file name and I upload it and it's added to the system. So then how do I reference that this dictionary should, what field, what managed property should it operate along? So if I go into the search schema, this is on the central admin site. I gone into the search schema. I'm drilling down into my custom managed properties I created. So you can see that in the recipe short description field that is indexed. I'm just pointing to the crawl properties for that content. And I click on the word extraction for custom one. So that means that the custom one is what I referenced in the PowerShell. So now this dictionary will work on this managed property. And you can work on other managed property as well. It's really simple to just enrich the content by a simple dictionaries. And this is something a lot of businesses can use depending on what type of business they are in. Maybe not recipes, but for other type of content. Now for the content enrichment web service, I'm calling out to another server that's running a piece of code, a custom code. So just to illustrate the effect here, it doesn't have to run on the SharePoint server itself. I'm pointing to another machine that's hosting a WCF service. And what I'm sending over is recipe nutrients. So that's just the field that has the nutritional information about the recipe. What I return back is a calorie counter that I then use to set up as a refiner in the UI. A couple of other cool things here that Katharina will talk about too is that we now have a trigger value. So if you have a lot of content, millions and millions of documents, you might not want to send every piece of content over to the external web service. So we can create a trigger condition here that says whether you should send this document over to the custom service to do the processing. Now, all of this happens over HTTP, so it's really quick. But if you transfer a lot of data, it might slow you down a little bit. But if you don't have a whole lot of properties sent over, it's really very little overhead in the web service. And it's not like faster for SharePoint running in a contained sandbox. It's a separate server that can be anywhere. So all I have to do is pause the crawl, and then run this command, and we'll tell that to for this trigger value, send all documents over to my web service. So I'm going to go show you the web service, a little bit of the code on that one too. All of this that I'm talking about here is fully documented on TechNet. So not the Contoso Food example, but how to run through these steps to set up a service. All of that is on TechNet. So I'm skipping through this pretty quickly here, but I'm using official documentation for this as well. Oops. So I'm going to go over to my remote server. Here's my web service. You can see now I'm just running on Windows 2008. So here I have a Visual Studio project. It's about 100 and so lines long. It's not that hard to set up. It's very simple to set it up. All I have to do is to take a couple of DLLs with me and reference them here in my code. So then all I have to do here now, the most important thing, is to implement the process item. So for all the document that comes from anywhere, from BCS or from any external content or SharePoint content, can run through my service. So the item is just the document I'm getting through and the properties that I can act on. So what I'm doing here, I'm taking the nutritional information, I just send it to a parse calories function I have, which basically just pull out where the calories are mentioned and the number of serves and figure out the how many calories per servings there are. I'm also just printing out some information. And then I return it back to the system. So what I'm returning here will be added back to the index. This application here is just a console application. So I also just printed out, there's a bunch of information here, but you can see that all the raw text that comes through is printed out here. So if you do want to create some and inspect what type of content is coming through, you can, and you have access to everything that's within here. So that's one application that shows you that it's fairly simple to set up. It's very simple to set up, follow documentation, you get this web service up and running very quickly. I'm going to show you another app, and I'm going to show it on a Surface. So this is, let's see. That is one. So what I've done here, though, is for Contoso Food, you can think of as an internet-facing scenario. So I've done some content enrichment on a productivity or your sort of inside a firewall scenario. So what I've done is I created a search feed, but before I go in, this is a community. If you haven't seen that before, you can join communities in SharePoint now. When you go into the community front page, you'll see what's new within this community. And the problem then is, well, what's new across all communities I'm following? So I just created a simple little search-based application to showcase some of the things you can do with content enrichment as well. So again, this is my UX, so it's not a pretty UX, but it does work nicely on a surface, which I was trying to get here. You can just flow through the different results here. The results here now are, it's a personalized search feed for all the communities I'm following and what's new from all of these communities. So instead of using the search page, I just created a different UI that's going to work much better on a Surface or a Apple, whatever, a touch device. So on top of here, I've extracted all the communities that these posts are from. This is just refiners on the top. And the tags are just refiners as well that I mapped in my schema. And also, I've used entity extraction now to say what products are mentioned in all of these posts that are posted by members in all these communities. So if I want to know more about posts that are about Windows Phone, Visual Studio, I can quickly just click on this and go in and pivot on that data. The other thing I've done is use a web service, for instance, to pull out a sort of a field. So depending on who posted to a community, I can look up for that person, whether they are an MVP or MCM. So are they actually someone of a lot of knowledge? So I can use that information now to now just pivot into posts only by highly skilled people, for instance. So I can see posts that I want to see and click on that and sort on it. I'm not really clicking on it right now because I can't get wireless to work on my Surface. So that's the example app. I'm not going to go too much in detail how I created that, but it's a similar type of content enrichment that I showed in the other one. So all the content that flows through, whether it's from SharePoint, post, newsfeed, you can act upon in the content enrichment web service and any type of line of business content that you feed through. You can do enrichments on it. And it's great for a knowledge management system where people, for instance, don't fill out a lot of metadata about the documents. You can now try to add metadata about those documents while they all flow through the system. So this is the place to do it. Go back to the presentation. So we looked at a few scenarios of the value of why content enrichment is important and what you can do. And now we're going to much deeper into the content processing component and what's going on, because that is important for how you are building a web service, to understand a little bit of the architecture behind the content processing component.
Yep, thank you, Runa. Just skip through these. Okay, so we're going to go a bit behind the scenes. So we've seen how Runar has taken some of the extensibility that we've built into content processing and enabled some new, really cool search-driven scenarios. So these are, of course, demos that work on a single server. But in about 15 minutes, Nils Petter is going to show you some best practices for how you can take a simple demo like that and scale it out to even a large enterprise system. That's what you really need when you want to go into production and make a performance system. So, let's see. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how indexing works to sort of give you the right background. Let's look at the different components that are involved in indexing. We have the crawler, and I think most of you will recognize the crawler from SharePoint 2010. It's the same crawler, but with some great new improvements, especially regarding freshness, so how long it takes before a document is changed until it ends up in the search index. And there was a session on that earlier today with Vaidi, and I strongly recommend that you go back and watch that if you didn't go to that session. And then we have the content processing component, which is new for SharePoint. So we've taken a lot of the processing that happened inside the crawler in 2010 and moved it into the content processing component, together with a lot of the extensible stuff that we did with fast search for SharePoint. One of the benefits with having all of this in a separate component is that we can now scale out content processing independent of crawling and of indexing. And then we have the index, which mainly comes from the fast search for SharePoint product. So what happens during crawling? I'm not going to go into too much detail, but the crawler will pick up changes. So if you create a new document, or you modify it, delete it, or you share it with somebody else, the crawler will pick up all these changes and then queue them up. And then it will talk to the, will push these changes to the content processing component. Inside the content processing component, there's a service called the CSS, or the content submission service. And then it will distribute these items across a number of flows. So that these little green lines, the flows are really where the interesting processing happens. And that's where we've sort of combined all the intelligent logic. And we take the item, and then basically we populate the search schema, the managed properties that go into the index. Now, once that's done, the item gets pushed to the index, and it gets persisted. And then the index will say, OK, I've written the document to disk. You can now search it. So it sends an acknowledgment or a callback to the content processing component. And then we send it back to the crawler. And at that point, you can go into the search administration page, look at the crawl log, and you can see that the URL has been successfully indexed. So we're sort of fully integrated with the whole search administration in SharePoint, making it much easier to manage than FastSearch for SharePoint. And then if something goes wrong during content processing or during indexing, that can happen. You could, for example, have a document that is in a format that's not supported. In that case, the crawler will send a fail callback to the crawl log, and then you can go and see why the item failed and then take the appropriate action. Now, let's see what happens when you start scaling out things. This is when we have to start caring about things like load balancing and scaling and high availability. So we do load balancing between the different components. So the crawler talks to the CSS, but the CSS will distribute the items across all the different content and processing components that are available. And then obviously we also distribute the items between different indexes. So so that's one way we scale up. But there's also some dynamic scaling going on inside the content processing component. The number of, so each of these flows here, they can process one item. And there are several of these flows that run in parallel. So on a normal sort of four-core VM, you can process 12 items in parallel at any given time. But if you have better hardware, we'll dynamically scale up. So we can, for a 12-core system, we'll go up to 36 documents in parallel. So this will happen without you having to worry about it. But you can override it using commandlets if you want to. For example, if you have another heavy workload on the same machine. For high availability, the crawler talks to an endpoint. If that endpoint in content processing becomes unavailable, it will automatically just fail over to the endpoint in a different content processing component. And finally, we have another kind of fault tolerance. If the crawler tries to push a document and it doesn't get contact with the service, or some other error happens, the crawler will retry the item a couple of times before giving up, because it's possible that there was just a network blip or some transient situation. So now let's move on and take a look at what happens inside content processing, inside one of these flows. Their crawler processes different kinds of changes, as I mentioned. It can be deletions or security updates. So there are different branches inside the flow. So when, for example, an item is deleted, it doesn't go through a lot of processing. We just send a signal to the index that the item is deleted. And the same if there's a security update, we just convert the ACLs into the internal format and then write to the index. And that change goes into a separate update group in the index. That makes it a lot faster because we don't actually have to go and touch the rest of the properties for that item. Of course, the most interesting stuff happens in the main branch of the flow. That's when if you upload a new document or if you modify an existing document, the crawler will send a bunch of properties, crawled properties, to content processing. The actual item, it won't send across the wire because they can be very big. It will write it to a temporary place, and then the content processing will just pick that up and then send it to the parser. We have a new parsing framework in 2013, so we've added some new format handlers for the new Office 2013 formats, as well as PDF. So you now have native support for PDF inside SharePoint, which is something I think a lot of people have been wanting. The document parsing will also add more properties, more crawl properties to the item. This can be metadata, like the title and author of the document. So once we have all the possible metadata for the document, that's when we look at the search schema that comes out of the box or that you've defined, and then map everything to manage properties. And from this point on, where the flow is only processing managed properties, we then do some magic to extract or to convert security descriptors, and then to do language detection. And I'll skip over the web service callout in this slide because out of the box, the web service callout is not enabled. So the next thing that happens is that we go into a step that deals with that prepares the properties that are used for people search. So there will be a processing of names to create phonetic name variations that will let you do fuzzy searching on names. Then that all the whole stream of text that's been created gets broken into different tokens. And then we do the metadata extraction, and that is really what's driving the smart, the deep links and the smart previews that you see. And finally, we extract a summary of the document, and then we take a look at all the links that were found in the document, write them to the analytics database, and then at some later point in time, a different timer job will go and analyze those links and calculate the rank of the document and then send that to the index. So it's quite a lot of stuff happening in there. And I have to say, content processing, it's not really an exact science. We're dealing with a lot of unstructured data, a lot of different formats, a lot of different languages. So we don't always know what's best for your content. So that's why we've built in some customization capabilities into the content processing flow. So we have, like in our previous release, we have support for iFilters. So you can just use PowerShell cmdlet to register your iFilters and then do a full crawl. Like, there's one slight difference with document parsing in this version is that we select the iFilter or the sort of the handler for the document based on an analysis of the document itself, of the binary form. So we don't just look at the extension because that can often be wrong. So finding the handler is more exact in 2013. The other place that you can extend is the word breaking. So you can add a whole new custom word breaker, or you can add new terms to a word breaker dictionary so that you look at terms like AT&T, for example, which would normally be split into three different tokens. You can add that as an exception, and then that will be just a single token when you search. Runar has already mentioned and made use of the custom entity extraction. So you saw how we could just create a list just a text file containing holidays and then add that using a PowerShell cmdlet. I want to call out there are 12 dictionaries that you can add in 2013, and there some dictionaries work on case sensitive, some are case insensitive, and some work on the raw text, and some work on the tokenized text, so that you can create entity extractors for CJK languages, for example. And then finally, there's the web service callout, and I'll go into more detail on that in the next slide. Actually, I just wanted to mention one more thing here. As you see, the web service callout is located in a particular place in the flow, and that has some bearing on what you can and what you can't do with the web service. So for example, you can see that language detection comes before the web service callout. So that means that the language property is something that you can use in your web service. So you can say, okay, if it's English, do this, or if it's French, do something else with the content. And then everything that comes after the web service callout is something that you could potentially influence with the managed properties that you output from the web service. So one example is for people search. You could, for example, create a new property that contains all the names that were found in the document, put them in a property, and then make that managed property phonetically aware, or you mark it in the search schema as a sort of a people search property, and then the people search stage will go and then do fuzzy name analysis on your property as well. So just one example of what you can do. So looking a little bit more at sort of the workflow, like how you go about configuring this. This is the Contoso web service that Runar showed you. So what you want to do in this scenario is first to go and configure your search schema, because the managed properties that the Contoso web service will output will need to be part of the search schema. So the web service can output properties that are not present on an item, but they have to be defined in the search schema. And for the input, anything that the web service needs to consume has to be a managed property. So this is one of the main changes from the way that it worked, the pipeline extensibility worked in FastSearch for SharePoint. So you need to take your curl properties and map them to managed properties before they can be consumed by the web service. And then you will configure the web service client using PowerShell, and you need to be a search admin in order to enable this. Obviously, when we're sending managed properties back and forth, possibly to a remote server, there can be sensitive information there, so we don't want anybody to be able to just go ahead and do that. Now let's take a look at some of the configuration options. So as you saw in the Runar's example, you configure the endpoint for the web service and the input and the output managed properties. And in this case, we've also configured a trigger to say, okay, only send documents to the web service if the content source is Contoso Food. This trigger expression is written in a sort of a separate, almost like a separate programming language called the expression language, and it's documented on TechNet, so you can go back and reference it. But it basically has logical operators like and or and not, and it also has a number of functions. So you can do string matching, like if you can, for example, check that a managed property starts with a particular string. You can do some regular expression matching. You can look at dates. You can add up number of properties. So you can be quite creative with the triggers. So let's just look at an example. If an item comes through and it doesn't have content source Contoso Food, it will just go through to the index and nothing more will happen. If it does contain Contoso Food, it will go to the web service, and the web service will do its processing, and then it will go to the index. There's a couple of more things I wanted to call out, and one is the failure mode. So you remember I talked about callbacks earlier, the fail callbacks and successful callbacks. Now, if you set your failure mode to be error and something happens when you do the web service callout, for example, your web service is down, in that case, the content processing component will send a fail callback to the crawler, and you'll be able to see in the crawl log that the item failed and why it failed. But if you set it to be warning, the item will still get indexed, but it won't have the managed properties that come from the web service. So this lets you decide, whether the web service callout, is it mission critical? Do you actually want to not index the document if it's not working, or is it okay, optional, if it's there or not? And finally, the debug mode is something that you'll use when you're doing development. Basically, if you turn it on, it will the flow will just send all the managed properties on the item to the web service. So it won't send the ones that you configured, it will just send you everything so that you can take a look at which managed properties are there, what do they look like, so you can build the logic in your web service. And then once you're sort of ready to go into production, you'll switch the debug mode off. One important thing to note is that there's just a single endpoint that you can configure here. So all the calls will go to the single web service endpoint. So this can have obviously performance implications if you scale out, and Nils Petter is going to talk about how you can address some of that. But I just wanted to show you a new health report that we added to the search administration. This health report lets you, you can access it together with the other crawl health reports, and it tells you what happens inside content processing. So you can go and select which activities that you want to look at, and it will tell you sort of on average how much time does the word breaker spend per document? How much time is spent in document parsing, for example? That can be really useful to see why your crawl performance is dropping. If document parsing is spending a lot of time, then you're probably processing very heavy documents. If indexing time is really high, then you know the indexing is a bottleneck, and maybe you need to scale out the number of indexers that you have if you're not happy with the crawl rate. And in here, you can also see how much time content enrichment is spending. So how much time is your web service adding to the overall processing cost, and the same with the custom entity extractors. So I'll hand it over to Nils Petter now, so he can show you how you can get around some of the limitations. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Okay, so I'll tell you a little bit about scalability for the content web service, and I'll also give you a brief example on how you can easily do lightweight scalability, scale out, and service aggregation. So let's start with looking at what we want there. We want to enable scale, large scale for the content web service that can match the scale of the search bar or the search topology, and also the requirement for document throughput. We want a sufficient level of fault tolerance so that if your single server goes down with the web service, you don't repeat the entire call. In addition, we want to enable service aggregation, and I'll just tell you what I mean by service aggregation here. Just the possibility of having multiple web service implementations in case you want to deal with content or different content sources. So having one big mashup with a lot of conditional logic isn't really that great to maintain. What you actually have is a configuration that lets you set a single endpoint service reference. And there are mainly three problems you have to deal with them. Firstly, it's a big bottleneck, and I'll give you a concrete example. If you have a large enterprise search topology, you'll have six content processing components across six hosts, and if they are have the recommended hardware, you'll have 144 Joe instances across the bar processing documents, and these are all doing one document per second, then you are basically processing 144 documents per second. Is the same as saying you're doing 144 callouts per second to this single service. So, of course, depending on the complexity of your service implementation, that will be a problem or not. Second, it's a single point of failure. So if your web service goes down, then you have a problem with the call. And lastly, there's no way here to have these multiple web service implementations that I talked about. So I listed a couple of possible vehicles here for solving this, and I'm not going to talk about network load balancing here, but we have a couple of blogs that we are publishing right after this conference about how to configure network load balancing for content enrichment, which can help you enable to really rescale and pop up. So I'll move on a little bit. What I'll show you today is something called WCF routing service, which is something that was introduced in .NET 4.0. And it's, okay, so what I'll show you now, it's very simple compared to the actual capabilities of the routing service. So if you're interested in more than what I show you here, we also have blogs, or we'll have blogs published on what you can do with WCF routing. With this example, I'm trying to solve basically the problem that Rudmar had. He was creating two demos for you with the Contoso site and also the community search site. can do everything declaratively. There's no need for any goal. We're just going to configure the routing service. And I'll start by showing you my solution. Okay. So here I created a normal WCF service application project named this routing service. And I'll show you first the webconfig. I have four sections I want to show you. If we start with the service section, this is where we expose the routing service. And the most important part here is the contract where we're using the iRequest reply router. So that this is a request reply channel. And then there's the client section where I define all the endpoints that the router is talking to. So you can see here I actually configured four endpoints, not two. So it's not just Contoso and the community search. There's also one extra endpoint as a backup for each one. And I'll show you a little bit later how backup works. Then in the behavior section, we have a new routing element. I'm referencing the filter table that we're going to define very soon. And I'm letting it know that I need to route on more than just the headers, because we need to actually inspect the quality of the SOAP route. And then finally, there's the routing section. Initially, we define the filters. I define two filters here. I won't go into detail, but all they do is inspect the SOAP route they receive, look at the property of the content source and try to figure out which one it is. After we define the filters, we have the mapping section where we map each filter to an endpoint. And in addition, I configure a backup list, which I define further down here. And what happens here is if the routing service gets a communication exception or timeout exception, and there's a couple of other specifications as well, from the primary endpoint, it'll start going through the backup list and just pick sequentially until it finds all that works. So we added a little bit of the fault tolerance here. And that's basically everything you have to do besides the service file, where you normally configure reference your own assembly and your own class with your web service implementation. But since we don't have any web service implementation here, you're going to reference the router class. So everything was configured with the header. So I can just show you the implementation that I didn't complete at all. Now for the next thing I'm going to show you, you're supposed to see a lot of live stuff, but unfortunately my network didn't deliver today, so I'll show you pictures instead. So here's the configuration where I listed the router that you just saw as the endpoint. And I created a trigger that would only send out documents for Contoso Food or community search. And the reason I did that was just for the sake of example, I also have a content source that's not ready, as you can see, very explicit. You can see the content processing activity report here. I thought I would just exit this. Just show you a version which wasn't as compressed as the one that we have. So you can see very clearly here, it's quite a short time span. How much time in these stack bars that is being used by the bars of the public role. I was going to show you this running live now so that you could actually see how the router was working. But instead you're getting a video from my hotel room at 4 a.m. this morning. It's not going to be as exciting as it sounds, but you'll see performance counters for the three web services. We have the routing service, which is the red bar, and then we have the Contoso service, which is the green, and the blue is the community. And of course, the sum of the two on the write side will always be the same as the value for the router. So you can see here how the currently we don't have that many user documents being processed, but this represents calls per second for each service. And the scale here is 0 to 100. I still have a bit of video for sure, so I can stop it there. So that's basically what I wanted to show you for this part of the presentation. If you're interested in more details about scaling up, in particular network load balancing and WSIP routing, then we have blogs coming out soon that we can go and see a lot more detail.
Thank you, Nils-Petter. Yes, just to round off and summarize, so you've seen how we can use the content enrichment web service to build new search experiences. We've taken a look behind the scenes at the content processing architecture in 2013 and then seen how we can actually, you know, take these fun demos and turn them into deployments that actually scale. So if you want to learn more about content processing and about content enrichments, we have a blog that was published just today, the first link there. You'll find the link in the PowerPoint. And then that will give you sort of a walkthrough of a basic scenario. And then there's also documentation on TechNet that's linked from that blog. And then, as Nils-Petter said, there's some new blogs coming out that will show you exactly how we did the WCF routing that was shown in this session. And then there's also one coming on how to do sort of best practices for debugging. So we've sort of taken the questions that we've got from our TAP customers and seen what, you know, what are people asking about when it comes to content enrichment and turned that into blog posts. So if you, you know, after you leave the session, if you have more questions or if you want to, you can come up, we can do some questions right now, or you can come up afterwards, or you can, you know, post a comment on the blog. So we're very happy to interact with you because we're really building these features for, you know, for our partners and for our customers. So we want you to be able to build all the different cool scenarios that you want. And we'll also be at the Ask the Expert session tomorrow. I just wanted to mention too that we have the sort of the architect behind the content processing component here today, Kjetil Bergstrand. So there's four of us here who can answer questions if there are any. Thank you.
So a question on the callbacks?
Yeah.
So first of all, can those be set from the web service, and can they be read from a BCS custom connector?
So the callbacks, so the, you know, when the web service completes its processing, and then the item gets indexed, then it's the sort of the index will send the callback, but the callback sort of includes the status for all the processing. So if the web service was successful, then the callback and everything else was successful, then the callback will be successful. If it failed, then the callback will be failed. So it's sort of part of the whole.
It's a binary. There's no.
Yeah,
way.
It's a binary.
Okay, and from the, is that available then to the to a custom connector as well?
Yeah. So it's also available. I don't think the custom connector doesn't get the callback. I think it's the crawler that would get the callback. But you would also, you know, if a document that was crawled by a custom connector failed, you would also see the error in the crawl log. So that's all integrated.
So
in one place.
My dream scenario was being able to have some specific parameters set in the callback and then having additional action taken on the part of the customer connector.
Mm.
That's not something we
That's do. Not something that we that we have, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks.
If you have custom XMLs in the Office documents, and I would like to have one specific element in the custom XML indexed as a managed property, is that possible, and how would I do that?
I think it's possible through BCS. I think so. I know in FastSearch for SharePoint we had this sort of XML mapper. I don't know if that's maybe that's the kind of capability you're referring to, but there you could sort of define a mapping between XML elements and managed properties. But there's a way that you can achieve the same with BCS, and I think there's already a blog out on that particular topic. So if you go, I'm not sure if it's in the IT Pro or sort of the dev blocks, but I think we've already sort of walked through a scenario how you can do that, so maybe take a look at that.
How does BCS relate to custom XML within the Office documents?
I don't know enough about it to know that for sure. So you're talking about the sort of the Open XML?
Yes.
Yeah. That I'm not sure about.
But you should have a handle to the binary or the original file, right? So you could get a handle of all the XML and parse that.
Where would I put the code to do that? So where is the extensibility point for me to put the code so I can? I mean, it's easy to write the code to grab the XML and find the element, but where can I put it so it want to make sure it's indexed?
You can send it around the
Okay, but I got the impression that the crawled properties were established before. So if I want to, can I create new managed properties as part of the?
So as long as you define them in a sort of schema prior to crawling, create new properties, then you can request the binary, you can host it yourself, and not put whatever you want into this new managed property.
Okay, excellent.
So they have to exist in the schema beforehand, basically.
I think you guys answered this question already, but is there still a one-to-one ratio for CPU cores to doc procs? Maybe doc procs have been
well,
replaced.
Not exactly one-to-one, but there is a fixed relationship. So there's, I think it's like one CPU core is like four, is it four or three flows in parallel? One CPU core is how many flows? Is it,
yeah,
it's three.
Right now the rule is,
equals the number of flows.
So
yeah.
Flows is basically the equivalent of doc processors, right?
Yeah, because each doc processor would do one document one document, and each flow processes one document.
Okay, so that's what that
means. Yeah, so you can override that. So if you have a very powerful machine or you're processing very light content, you could sort of scale out the number of flows.
And can you do multiplexing in the pipeline extension stages? Before it was you call one executable and you had to add actual additional logic there in order to.
Are you talking about sort of piping output from one into the
just
into another?
Just additional pipeline extension stages.
You can't do multiple sort of after one another. You would have to sort of embed that into one web service.
So you still have to write some logic to do that.
Yeah, I'd have to write some logic to do that. I mean, it's obviously a feature that would be very nice to have, and we're considering, but it's not
okay
there in this version.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. So can we drop a document from the pipeline? The functionality was there in fast ESP, was removed in fast search for SharePoint 2010. But is it possible to drop a document when it is?
Sorry, can you, if it's possible to?
Drop a document?
Oh, to drop, you know, to not index the document.
Not.
I think you could achieve it if you're if you configure the failure mode to error for the web service, and it would always return a failure, then the document would get dropped.
Not to put Matt King on the spot here, but he did that in. He did it in his presentation tomorrow, so that example did exactly what he said. So.
Thank you.
Do you have to implement the content enrichment web service in C Sharp?
No.
It's a web service. Yeah, it's just a SOAP web service.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Whatever.
So
okay. Very nice.
When you can have different crawlers and different CSS for scaling purposes, wouldn't it be possible to hardwire these so that you have different configurations per crawler CSS, like the old fast pipelines more or less?
There's only one configuration, like the content processing flow, so that's kind of fixed, so you can't override that.
Okay. Thanks.
So it looks like I still have, in my mind, two options to do the enrichment. I can either do it in BCS connector or do it in a web service, like the enrichment service. So do you guys have any scenario or guideline or recommendation how to choose between the two?
Well, I don't think you could do it in BCS, but you could do it before it got crawled. Before it was picked up by BCS.
So for a like a custom or like a third party repository, I can either write a BCS connector.
Yeah.
And then pull in some metadata, or I can use one of the built-in connectors and then try to enrich with injecting metadata. So those kind of a scenario that's kind of common in our environment. So that's why I wonder if there's you guys have any.
It depends on a bit on your scenario. But if your scenario is to apply the same kind of processing to all of your content, you know, both SharePoint and external, then having it inside the content processing would be like be the only place where you could actually see all the content, where all the content's coming through. So that could be one, you know, one consideration when you're deciding where to implement it.
So just